In 1918, the world was still in the grips of the Great War, although things were getting better on the Western Front and peace was not far away. Yet football continued, with Essendon and St Kilda coming back into the league. This meant 14 rounds across the season, each team playing the others twice. This season saw Geelong make a subtle change to their uniform. Richmond finally achieved something they have yet to do in the league. Dave McNamara recaptures some form, and we will find out what happens when an umpire falls ill mid-match. All that and more coming up after the song.
It's the history of football we knows about, and we want to expand what we know. We'll become such intelligent gentry with every kick-to-kick show. Beginning in the time 1870s, right through to the modern day. Tune in for Timmy Coops and the Kazman to hear what they all have to say.
Right, welcome to the 1918 podcast. I'm Tim and that's Kaz.
Hi, everybody.
He always likes to jump in. And this is Charlie to my right in Radio Land.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank
Guys,
you, Tim.
We're here to talk about the 1918 season. We've done it. We're 100 seasons away.
Can you believe it? We're slowly catching up.
Although, 1918.
It's almost 2019, so we need a couple more and then we'll be okay.
We've got to get ahead.
Yeah. We've got to get ahead of ourselves.
Lots to talk about in today's episode, but let's get stuck into this, some history straight away.
Give us some history.
Charlie.
Good year, 1918. Lots happened. Interesting year.
Yep.
Really?
Well, not a great year. Well, yeah, no. Anyway, we'll get back to the great years soon. Yeah. I feel bad calling them great years at the moment. But let's go through some events that happened. February 19th, the capture of Jericho by the Egyptian Expeditionary Forces began and the British occupation of the Jordan Valley. February 19th and the 25th in World War One as well, the Russian Navy evacuated Tallinn through thick ice over the Gulf of Finland.
They also had, there was also a Finnish civil war in 1918 I read about.
Oh, because World War One wasn't enough for them?
Apparently. Yeah.
And it just needed a bit more. I didn't hear that. I didn't read that. That's very interesting. On March 12th, Moscow became the capital of Soviet Russia. And on March 19th, the US Congress established time zones and approved daylight savings, which went into effect on the 31st of March.
Just in America or the whole world? America is the boss of the world.
I don't know whether the Congress has charge over anyone else, but you know, maybe that was the one to push everyone else into doing it. On April 1st, the Royal Flying Corps and the Royal Navy Naval Air Service in Britain merged to become the Royal Air Force, the first autonomous air force in the world. On April 21st in World War One, Manfred von Richthofen, better known as... Come on, Kaz. We've done this.
I was thinking Beethoven because of the Hoven part.
Manfred von Richthofen.
He's a German. He flies planes.
That would be the Red Baron.
The Red Baron. Thank you very much. The war's most successful fighter pilot died in combat at Morlancourt Ridge near the Somme River.
That was an Australian that shot him down, is that right?
Supposedly. Yeah. Well, definitely Australians who found him.
Who found him, yes. Okay. And between June and August, no exact dates on this, the Spanish flu became pandemic and over 30 million people died in the following 6 months.
Which will affect the football season next year.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Any more Red Baron references?
No, there's a few more German ones, though. On November the 9th, Kaiser Wilhelm II abdicates and chose to live in exile in the Netherlands. Not a bad place to be in exile, I guess. Mm.
Lots of cheese.
November 29th, Serbia annexed Montenegro.
That's not nice.
Terrible idea, right? Montenegro's great. You've been there, haven't you?
Yeah.
December 17th, the Darwin Rebellion in Australia. This is the first I knew about this. Disaffected workers marched on Government House in Darwin, demanding the resignation of the administrator of the Northern Territory, John A. Gilruth.
And we congratulate them. That
Absolutely.
Like
I wonder what they
do.
Were angry about. Mm. Those Northern Territory people are crazy. And I can say that because I live there.
Okay. Because Kaz and I have no opinion.
No, you shouldn't.
Don't attack us. It's all Charlie.
He's insane. Yeah, that guy's insane. Yeah. And yes, that's the history.
Can I add some things to that?
Please.
The execution of the Romanovs.
Oh, yes.
In 1918. Although Anastasia's still...
hanging around.
Oh, apparently, yeah. She'd be bloody old now, but...
yeah, dear. Yeah.
And obviously the end of the war.
Yeah. Well...
I mean, it's the spoilers.
Yeah, it did end eventually.
The hit song of 1918 was The Tiger Rag by the original Dixieland Jazz Band.
Check it out.
You got some births for us.
I do, I do. I'm trying to be really...
Succinct
with the births, because I feel like the history can get on top of you, and so many people were born every year.
Every
it's
year?
Amazing.
Many. Even this year?
It keeps on happening, even this year. People just keep getting born. It's madness. So a few that I picked up on that were very interesting were...
I know Kaz has one.
Oh, please, Kaz, give it to me to start.
All right. You may all be aware of a composer called Leonard Bernstein.
Oh, yes.
And composed West Side Story and became well-known conductor and very influential.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was about to look up exactly...
Spike Milligan?
Spike Milligan was born in 1918. See, these are people I didn't have on my list.
Done your job.
In fact, the reason I'm... Thank you for vamping here, because I can't find my list. So I apologise. It's extremely succinct because there's no one on it.
There you go.
Right. Sorry.
It'd be hard to make a succinct one because there's so many influential...
Yeah, exactly.
Individuals.
Yes. All right, well, let's just
Move on. Apologies.
We'll send it out on Twitter.
Yeah, maybe. We won't. All right, let's get stuck into some league news.
Because it's football season, and that's the reason it's the time of the year that we love.
So, Essendon and St Kilda are back.
Back.
And I'll talk a bit more about why Essendon's back shortly. So only Melbourne are now standing out. Only your little red legs.
Only the little red legs, because, you know,
they're
amateurs.
We are...
high pitches.
Yeah. Amateurs.
A few interesting things happened this season. The best thing for all the players was in mid-May, the VFL decided to get rid of those pesky stewards.
Yeah, finally. Well, geez, there's been a lot of issues with them, haven't they? They just seem to be there to,
making life difficult.
Yeah, and sort of more push their own cause. They just get in the way. It's good to only have 8 teams in the league this year, isn't it?
It makes it nice and even.
Yeah, maybe that's why. Kept Melbourne out.
Maybe. Yeah, 14 rounds, each team plays each other twice.
They didn't tell Melbourne they were going back.
No, exactly.
But chaps.
What do you mean, guys?
Yeah. We're all standing out this year, guys.
Now, did you read about the round 10 quirk?
I did not.
So round 10, it occurred that 1 played 2, 3 played 4, 5 played 6, and 7 played 8.
I like a quirk. Oh, yeah. That's a good quirk.
Just a quirky thing. Just happened to be the ladder was that way at that stage. And
that's fantastic.
That good.
Yeah, I like it. Mm. That's great.
Now, two other things. Round 14, Len Phillips of Essendon played his last of his 13 senior VFL matches, having played his first VFL match for St Kilda in 1914. He also played for the following clubs: Melbourne City Football Club, Essendon Association, Richmond, Brighton, St Kilda, West Perth, Footscray and Hawthorn. He has the distinction of playing senior football with 9 different clubs.
That's amazing.
8 in Melbourne.
Yeah, I was going to say there's just one in West Perth. Just one trip west. Yep. Was there?
Was he aware of that at the time? He just did that
get it happening.
Well, he came back to Melbourne after that. Like, he played, that was 15 to 17. Mm. And then he came back to Essendon this season, 1918. And final note I've got here is that the VFL donated $20,000 to the Patriotic Appeal, which was a staggering amount of money at that time.
Yeah, I think they've been pretty on top of it. They really held their heads high yes. when it came to the war effort, I think.
They're really committed to the cause. Essendon playing this year with no player payments.
I'll talk about that shortly.
Yeah, we don't want to... stabbing your toes there.
We're doing what we usually do, Kaz. We're going from...
And me cutting you off?
Last to first.
Me cutting you off. Yeah, exactly.
Because if we go very quickly, you'll find...
that in 8th place we have Essendon. Essendon, 3 wins, 11 losses.
Yeah, look, a pretty disappointing season, even though they are, you know, they've been standing out for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
So, in 1918, at a meeting of the Essendon Football Club and the East Melbourne Cricket Club, Senior cricket officials requested that the football club begin again, because without their revenue, the cricket club feared they'd be in dire financial straits by the end of the year.
Oh.
So under this pressure, the football club agreed to this request and fielded a team. All the players fully supported this motion.
Great.
Yeah, so... Yeah, cricket forced them to play.
Forced them to play. That's good. Well, I think, you know, coming back for that reason makes sense then, and they obviously put... Yeah, they did it well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you got much there about debutantes?
Debutantes, they had quite a few players, actually.
Yeah.
They had 40 players play for them that year, and 69 goals kicked among them. I think they were... Yeah, which is quite a lot bigger than the last few years. Obviously, the pool has been quite a lot smaller because of recruitment for the army and things,
Absolutely.
But these numbers are starting to come back up again. You've got guys like Cyril Gove playing 2 games. Out of the guys... Yeah, there's quite a few who only played 1 game as well. So, yeah, there was a big turnover, obviously, coming back into it, trying to figure out who's still fit in the team. Yeah.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Also, you had your coach back as Jack Worrell.
Yep.
The captain was Fred Baring, who was
Fred Baring.
He was playing...
His brother... hold on. No, he...
He wasn't captain, but he was playing for them before the war, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then their leading goal kicker was Norm Hall with only 15. So, yeah, out of those...
Score.
Oh, well, yeah, very. But I guess out of the amount of goals that they kicked, he almost kicked a quarter of them.
Yeah.
So, not bad.
Now, one of those debutantes was a player by the name of Tom Fitzmaurice.
Oh, okay.
He had actually... probably Fitzy. He tried out with Carlton in 1915, but didn't really make an impression. He'd go on to become one of the members of Essendon's Team of the Century. Oh. He was also quite influential. He played in Geelong's first premiership and then went to North Melbourne as well.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so...
Follow him closely.
Yeah, we might hear that name again. Now, round one, Essendon played Richmond in their comeback game, and both teams lined up and gave 3 rousing cheers, Kaz, for the field umpire.
Hey!
Captain Nugent, because he had been fighting in the war, he'd done well, and he'd actually won a military cross.
Oh, that's amazing.
All the players gave him a big cheer, which is lovely.
Yeah, coming into umpire football
and
game.
And extremely rare, yeah.
Completely different situations of going off to battle.
Indeed. Did you ever get 3 cheers?
Only from people that I knew who...
Okay. Now, there's only a few things to talk about with Essendon. They only had... And interesting to start reading some of the text about them. They're starting to be referred to as the Dons.
Where did that...
In the football record,
well,
I've
Essendon,
noticed...
Yeah, they're yeah, beginning Essendon, to be the Dons. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
We had the Tigers, was it last season?
Yeah, so they were referred to as the Tigers for the first time, weren't they?
Stay on Essendon, come on.
And the mighty Dons.
So I can get rid of them because we won the wooden spoon. Only wins against St Kilda, Geelong and Fitzroy this season, so pretty low.
Oh.
In their second loss to Richmond in round 8, Roy Liang, I think that's how you say it, was a shining light, taking a mark after mark to stop Richmond attacks. He received a standing ovation at the end of the game, although they only scored 3 goals for 22 for the game, which is the lowest score against Richmond they scored. And interesting to note that all profits the club made were donated to the Patriotic and other charitable funds.
Oh, great.
Being £194, 19 pence and 8 shillings, I think.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
That's it in the old money.
It is, yes. Moving on, Kazman.
Okay. Tim, it is Geelong in 7th place.
We are Geelong.
So Geelong, 3 wins, 11 losses, same as Essendon, Tim.
Yep.
But slightly higher percentage, 75.8%.
Yeah, enough percentage.
So captained and coached, I believe, in that year by the same guy, Jim Kearney, who's back. Funnily enough, lead goal kicker, who do you reckon it was?
Percy Martini
with 24, so not as many as he usually kicks. Although they only kicked 95 for the season, so again, you know, a fair percentage of them.
Yep.
And they had a far few players play for them that year, only 28. Yeah.
There you go. Now, something I found out about Geelong, and I don't know if it's true, but they couldn't obtain the dark navy wool used to make their club socks. And I've spoken to the guy that runs the Football Jumpers website about this to see if he knows more about it. And he was saying that a lot of the dye that was supplied was from Germany.
Oh, so they really
it was
cut
in
off.
Short supply. So supposedly they wore red socks that year, but there's nothing else. There's no other mention I can find of Geelong wearing red socks in 1918, apart from this one sentence in a Geelong history book I've got.
Oh, okay.
So they may have worn red socks, they may not. We know they've worn red socks to avoid clashes in the past.
Yep.
Ah.
So
maybe.
Yeah.
Just one detail. We might not be talking bright red. Maybe sort of like a darker red.
Possibly.
And it's sort of like blending in a little bit more. But either way, it's not going to be too...
Like a maroon.
Yes.
Perhaps. Oh, no, you can't do that. That's Fitzroy.
Yeah. Ah. So there we go.
What are you going to do?
Indeed. So, prior to the round two game, there was a big presentation made to President A.H. Bowman. On behalf of the club, it was a framed photograph of Jack Davey, Gordon Kearney, Jack Baker and Teddy Rankin.
Nice.
And their sons, Albert, James, Jack Jr. and Albert, who all play for Geelong now, in 1918.
Oh. Who play, yeah.
So all father sons.
That's wow. very cool. I Isn't like it? That.
Yeah.
That's a great gift. Better than a pewter been... mug or a gold fob watch or something
or
like that.
Or a tailored-made hat.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if that photo's still in Geelong.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting to find out, wouldn't it?
Mm.
You think, because like we were saying the other week when we were talking to Barb, it's like the things that arrive, you don't think of them as important at the time because it's just
it's
there.
Not history yet.
Yeah, it's not history yet. Yeah. Exactly.
Mm.
Now,
yeah.
you'd give anything for that thing.
So we need to take the show on the road and do like a day where we go to every single club and look at their Hall of Fame.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yes. There it is.
Also in that round two, Percy Allingson kicked two goals against Essendon, but was also reported for striking, was given an 8-week suspension.
Mm.
He would, however, Kaz, go on to become an umpire in 1931, becoming the 150th field umpire in VFL history.
Oh, good on him.
I think the players would probably give him some respect, wouldn't they?
They would. And interesting, another interesting fact, in their one win, which was round three, Harry Marsham, who we know played for Richmond for that season, two seasons ago.
Yep.
He refused to play against Fitzroy unless he was partnered in the ruck by Jack Gray.
Why's that?
I don't know, he just must have liked playing with Jack Gray. So due to this behaviour, he was stood down the following week by the committee, and they had a special meeting to discuss this.
Because they didn't want him with all the power.
Yeah, and they said, look, until you are loyal to this club and follow instructions, you're not going to play.
Fair enough.
So he missed the game, and I think he came back in round five.
Hmm.
But Geelong went through a long losing streak in the middle of the season before winning the last two games.
They did. They were basically sitting second bottom the entire season, weren't they? In round one they lost, they were sitting in the second bottom, and then they kind of just stayed there the entire time.
Bad locker room.
Yeah, maybe.
It was a bit, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Well, Essendon would have gone above them in the last three rounds.
They did, right. In round 10, Essendon got above them.
And then Geelong won those last two games to sneak up.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
Okay. Richmond. Yellow and black. So Richmond with 5 wins, 9 losses and 87.7%, Charlie.
Yes, so they were coached by Bernie Nolan, captained by Clary Hall, and their lead goal kicker was Donald Don, with 19. How good's that?
Is Clary short for something? Because I know that's what you guys call Clayton Oliver, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Clarence, I would assume, usually...
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know why. I don't know where Clayton Oliver's nickname came from.
Or
Claytex
doesn't sound like something you would use in 1918.
No.
What is Claytex?
Clayton Oliver. Someone called him Claytex the other day.
There you go.
So that might be just my nephews, actually.
Yeah.
Can I edit that out?
Debutants?
Debutants, they had, again, 33 players used and kicked... Yeah, that's right, yeah. And kicked 96 goals.
So only one more goal than
Only one more Geelong. Goal than Geelong for the season.
Ooh.
They had quite a few players only play one game for them, guys like Charlie Fairing, Claude Fell, Hugh Mulcahy, and then they had a few, that's about it. Stewie Ray, that was, yeah.
Now, early on in possibly pre-season, good old Bernie Herbert was at an annual meeting. Somebody asked him if he was going to play this season, and he said this, "I'm going to play until we beat Carlton, if I live to be 100 before we do it." And guess what happened, boys?
They beat Carlton.
Round two.
Yes.
Oh, finally.
Richmond 7-16-58 defeat Carlton 8-5-53 for the first time since joining the league.
Yeah.
After 24 losses to them.
How good's that?
So now they've beaten every team in the league.
And it was close. And at Princes Park as well.
Yes.
Love that.
So when the crowd was running for the trams after the match, you could hear the people proudly shouting, "We're from Richmond. We've done it at last." Someone asked Herbert if he was going to stop playing now that he'd helped beat Carlton. And he said, "Get out. Don't ask silly questions." Now, in round five, in Geelong's 11-point loss to Richmond, Roy Taylor of Richmond obtained an easy goal. The ball dropped between the goals and behind posts, and the Geelong men, thinking the ball was gone behind, ceasing play. Roy Taylor, the only Richmond man in the area, saw the ball had not gone behind and calmly walked up and kicked the goal.
Love it.
Richmond scored... So six goals scored in the final 10 minutes, and five of them were to Richmond as they ran out winners there. Now, I've got a funny story for you about Vic Thorpe. Fullback of Richmond.
Yeah, go on.
So he was a
was a boxer as well, wasn't he? Isn't this the story? I'm pretty sure something Rhett told us about that.
No, he was a tea dealer. He dealt tea.
Oh.
And he left. So he's.
Do you need to deal it anyway?
So, in back alleys.
Yeah. On some peppermint.
So
got some along.
This is on Rhett's great website. His horse, which was named Black Bess. He left his horse and a carriage carrying £4 worth of tea, coffee and cocoa in Chapel Street, and it was stolen by one William L. Maxwell. And he began selling all of Vic's stocks at a cheaper rate to passers-by. he ended up colliding with a furniture van and was sentenced to 3 months in prison and fined £2 for illegally using a horse and vehicle and £1 for driving on the wrong side of the road. In his defence, he claimed he was suffering from neuritis after returning from the war.
Oh.
Jeez, that sounds like a movie.
Paul Vic Thorpe.
Yeah.
Now, round six, Richmond lost to St Kilda, and the loss started to foster rumours that at least two Richmond players had been bribed not to do their best.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Bribery's back. We haven't had it for
a while. Yeah, we haven't been talking
Bongo
about it
much,
have we?
He did, he's retired now. During the week, a Richmond player hurt by these accusations, cast over him by the non-selection for the South Melbourne game in the wake of bribery rumours, confronted the committee and declared his innocence. And the committee unanimously passed a vote of confidence in him. So he ended up playing.
Yeah.
Mm.
Good.
But as we'll get to talking about St Kilda later, they were pretty good this season.
Yeah.
So losing to them wasn't a bad thing.
Mm.
And finally, round 10, George Bayliss was absent for the team. He was suffering the flu. So Roy Taylor was rushed into the team despite not training for some time because he was unselected. Regulars were not present. And that's Richmond.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just another Richmond.
Yeah.
Another Richmondy season, although they've finally done it. They've beaten Carlton.
They have. That's a win for the season.
Yeah. They've got them all. Yeah. It's only taken them...
11 years?
Yeah. 10.
1907?
08, wasn't it? They joined?
07. I think.
Mm-hmm. Write us in.
You got the book there, quick.
Yeah, I do.
Can we edit this out?
I thought it was 08. Anyway, yeah. So, in about a decade, shall we say.
No, sorry, you're right. It is 08 because it was the same year as the carnival.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sorry, Charlie. I was wrong. You were right.
That's the first time that's happened. Yes.
Okay, I just can't wait for Vic Thorpe to get back back in and start kicking some goals.
I was wondering, when you were saying that before, I was like thinking, maybe it's his wife at home, and he's like, are you going to retire anytime soon? He's like, when we beat Carlton, and then they do, and he's like, shh, I want to keep playing.
Guys, we're up to Fitzroy in fifth place. Fitzroy, 6 wins, 7 losses, and 98.7%, just outside the four.
Just outside. So, captained and coached by George Holden again. Their best and fairest, it's saying, in this year was Jim Freak, funnily enough.
Yep.
And their leading goal kicker was Jim Freak as well, with 29. So that's
pretty low for him.
Yeah, but it means they've all been low. Martini was quite low as well, so they've all sort of, been like that. He kicked 29. Stan Molan was just behind him with 24. They kicked 106 goals total for the season and had 31 players used.
Yep.
Haven't heard his name. Cool.
Stanley Molan, yeah. They both played 14 games.
Beautiful.
Now, Fitzroy started with losses to St Kilda and South, so not starting the season greatly. They broke through for their first win in round three, holding Richmond scoreless in the first quarter to set up quite a good win. Their round 12 loss to cellar dwellers Essendon mostly put an end to their finals chances, and they had to beat Carlton. I think in the last few weeks they played Carlton and had to beat them by 9 goals to make up percentage, but they just couldn't do it. So it seems to be a bit of a regular pattern for Fitzroy over the last few years where they kind of play an ordinary season but have fallen into the finals.
Yeah.
This year it didn't work. They didn't fall into the finals.
No.
To be able to then switch it on and play well.
Yeah.
So starting to learn you've got to play a full season to actually...
To make it in.
Also, they lost John McMahon, who was the club's first president and one of the men considered the founding fathers of Fitzroy.
Oh, that is...
They lost him to...
Just natural causes of death, yeah. I believe.
Hmm. So a change ahead for them.
Oh, I don't know if he was still president at that stage, if he's dying from illness. He might have been, but he has passed away. So
he was still that, you know, heart and soul of the club, basically. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Moving along now to St Kilda. So let's give it is for old St Kilda. St Kilda with 8 wins and 6 losses in the four, guys.
Which is pretty impressive considering they didn't play for the last 2 seasons.
Yeah, it is. Maybe that was enough to blow the cobwebs out.
Well, considering Essendon finished last.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
With the same break.
Why, what is that so surprising? Everyone...
So, coached by James Smith and captained by Harry Lever, their lead goal kicker was Dave McNamara with 17. They're all very low totals for their big guys this year, they seem to be.
Mm.
He was only, I think, just ahead of... No, he was tied with Les Boyd, who kicked 17 also. That may have been in the finals, though, that Les Boyd kicked a couple. And Roy Cazaly was only just behind them with 10.
Yep.
They had 32 players play for them and 103 goals kicked altogether.
And a lot of their players were solid players, like well-hardened veterans.
Yeah, like you've got...
Harry Weaver and Dangerfield still there?
Yeah, Wells Ikey. Is that how you say it? I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. I think so.
Reg Berry, Jack James. Yeah, Roy Cazaly, Billy Schmidt.
Yep, Schmitty. Mm. And although Vic Cumberland was still on the front, so he hadn't come back.
Yeah, yet. No. Gordon Dangerfield was there. You're absolutely right. Yeah. So yeah, it was a very similar team to the last team that played in the VFL, wasn't it? Yeah. They hadn't changed a hell of a lot.
No. And they continued to play in the colours of Belgium, those yellow, black, and red stripes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So they really just turned that yellow, the white to a yellow. It's really changed. Now, speaking of Roy Cazaly, in their narrow 1-goal win over Fitzroy in round 1, he was said to have played like a lion in the ruck, towering over opponents.
Oh, great.
I mean, would you expect any less from the big man?
He'd played the previous season or two in some lower leagues that were still around when the war was on.
Yeah.
So he had a bit of match fitness as well. Now, round 3, guess who's back? Dave McNamara.
Oh,
yeah. So this would be South's only loss for the year.
Is that right?
Yeah, their only loss for the year. Spoilers.
I was going
to
say.
I will, and there's a good story behind it we'll talk about when we get to South Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
Saints knocked them off with a gutsy 5-point win. Dave McNamara, his first game for the club since 1915, kicked 3 goals in the first quarter and then moved to defence and helped them really just hold on for the win.
Nice.
Well, we're going to talk about South's ruckman later, and so it's interesting because Roy Cazaly must have rucked really well that day because South's ruckman that year was really good.
You'll find out why they weren't on their best later.
Okay. I held back there too.
They were really highly rated that year, St Kilda. Everyone, like a lot of things that we're reading were saying they were highly skillful, the most skillful team to watch in the league apparently. So. Mm-hmm. Which is good to hear for St Kilda.
So after they won that game against South Melbourne, they then lost to Collingwood the following week by 10 goals without Dave McNamara.
No.
Only to then beat Richmond the next week by 17 points.
Nice.
So up and down. Round 10, they beat Carlton 4-2, but they won by 27 points because they kicked 4-20.
Oh, my God.
And they held the Blues to Carlton 2-5 for the whole game. And 3 points in the second half.
That would have been a terrible game to watch.
Yeah, wouldn't it? Four goals, 20.
Wouldn't it be horrendous? You would, if you were a supporter, you would be losing your mind, wouldn't you?
Round 12.
Although I guess they didn't have that thing of being like, we pay you millions for this. They're getting paid nothing.
Yeah.
It's a whole, different thing.
Round 12 at the Junction Oval. Actually, yes, round 12, Junction Oval against Collingwood. St Kilda were missing captain Harry Lever. But with Billy Schmidt taking the reins and Wells Ikey dominating the midfield, they won by 13 points.
Yeah, like as we just said before, these names you're mentioning, they're solid, solid players, aren't they? Like, it was a really good team.
But then they did a Ross Lyon-style ploy in the final round and rested a heap of their players when they played Geelong because they were guaranteed a final spot. Mm-mm. So they thought they'd rest them up for the finals, Kaz. Yeah,
do you reckon that's where Ross got it from?
Possibly. And, so they rested Dave McNamara, Ted Collins, Les Boyd, Norm Turnbull and Bill Hannon. I mean, not names we know, but still resting players.
That's quite a lot, six altogether. Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of names in there that we know, and two of them are basically the only ones who kick goals for the entire season.
And so what happened, Tim?
They got beaten.
Funnily enough.
And that's probably bloody why Essendon finished on the bottom, because St Kilda threw that game
to Geelong.
To Geelong. Geelong win that last game to skip, jump us on the ladder.
Yeah, well, karma is a
bit. Maybe I'll do what Collingwood supporters do. I'm going to start a petition to get St Kilda to take that back.
Turn it around.
Take back one of our wooden spoons.
Wooden spoons, you don't want it anymore.
No. Nah.
Although karma is a bitch, and we see that in the finals, don't we, with St Kilda? Mm. So, yeah.
I'm so disappointed by that. I want to be able to hang it on him for a good reason. Nothing doing. Third place.
As we said as Melbourne supporters last year, if you need someone else to win in order to not get a wooden spoon, it's yours.
Carlton. Carlton now with 8 wins and 6 losses and 116.5%, which is just under double what Essendon's percentage was.
It's fun. It's fun for all of us.
Yeah. Good on you.
So coached by Norm Clark. Who?
Not Hackenschmidt?
It is Hackenschmidt.
Oh,
I was just giving you a moment to just slip it in there. Yeah. Hackenschmidt. captained by Rod McGregor. And their lead goal kicker was Ern Crowley with 35.
That's a high one.
Yeah, comparatively. He doubled the next closest. Charlie Fisher kicked 17 and Harry Horton kicked 16. So all up, they kicked 121 goals for the season and had 35 players play for them.
Well, I got some good stories about Carlton. The Bluesium website, which is online, has a really good history of Carlton.
I like that.
So I've got quite a few things here.
I think I remember looking at that in the pilot episode.
Potentially.
Not very much. No.
So round one, they went down to Collingwood by 35 points, but Carlton captain Rod McGregor had to stand down from this game because he had just heard about his brother's death
on the front.
In the front, yeah. Oh. Just before the game.
Oh, no.
Round two, they lost to Richmond, obviously, for the first time. In beating Essendon in round 4, Carlton kicked 8 goals, 27, to win by 35 points. Now, round 5. During the halftime interval at South Melbourne, in which they lost, scenes of great disorder took place near the liquor bar on the eastern side of the ground. Here we go, Kaz.
I can't wait to hear this.
A man who was standing at the bar directed an insulting remark to the barman. Jumping over the counter, the barman approached the other with an apparent intention of chastising him, but the crowd rushed the bar, seized bottles of liquor, drank the contents and hurled the empty bottles against the fence. Then they rolled a barrel of beer out of the bar, and all drinks free being the motto. The contents of the barrel were soon consumed. About 14,000 people were present at the match, and the crush was so great the big exit gates, someone fell, one lad who was about 12 or 14 was trampled. Before being extricated.
Oh my god. So it's just a massive booze fest.
Yeah.
I love it. Free booze. Yeah. What did you say? All drinks free.
Yeah.
I love
it.
All drinks free. Yeah, I'm just imagining it. I'm just imagining now, like going to the bull ring or something like that. And just being like, geez, it's taking you a while to get me a drink. And then the bartender jumping over.
Wait, I'll have it.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone else just jumping in.
Yeah, it's great.
It's finally started. Imagine
the MCC reaction to that.
All drinks free. It would have been great, wouldn't
so
it?
So many people. There'd be so many new intakes of members because everyone would be
out. Yeah, everyone would be out.
Everyone would be out.
That's what you need to do. Do us a favour. I know some people still waiting.
Are you on the list?
No.
We can get you on the list if you want.
I will talk to you about that later. What I have to do. Into us. Tell me what I should have to do for 10.
Round 6, Carlton beat Geelong by 11 goals. But umpire Fox took ill at half time.
Oh.
So he was replaced by umpire Naismith, who was the boundary umpire. Who's going to do the boundary umpiring?
Every boundary umpire's dream.
Who was it?
Replaced by a Geelong player and soldier plucked from the crowd.
You're kidding.
Norm McKay, who was training. He was at training camp in Broadmeadows and was one of the soldiers watching on.
That's amazing. So he just jumped in.
Yeah, jumped in.
Geelong player.
The Blues won the game 10-2. Oh, sorry, kicked 10-2 in the second half.
Yeah.
So there's a suggestion he did an admirable job.
They absolutely flogged them in the end, didn't they? They kicked 9 in the last quarter.
Yep.
To Geelong's 1.
Round 8, the Blues avenged their loss to Carlton in round 1 with this 8-point victory, but not without controversy, Kazmam. Gus Dobry of Collingwood was suspended for 4 for striking Percy Dakin. In addition, 2 Carlton players in Harry Horton and Rod McGregor were suspended for 15 games and 5 games respectively for giving unsatisfactory evidence.
Oh, that's
just great. Saying they didn't see it.
Yep. Now, boundary umpire Fox, so he must have, Fox from the previous game, demoted to boundary perhaps, supported by 3 Collingwood players, went to the tribunal after the Collingwood players had been suspended and said he had told Horton that he was going to report him, but didn't report him after the game. Carlton players denied knowledge of the report, but the tribunal accepted the Collingwood players and umpires' version. Collingwood's Bill Walton was also suspended for 2 matches for striking Paddy O'Brien.
What a fuss.
They were all over it, weren't they?
Yeah. So giving unsatisfactory evidence, that's a lot of games for unsatisfactory evidence.
Isn't it? Mm. Whereas I thought that's kind of like almost expected of players these days to not really dob each other in. Well, I mean, not so much these days anymore because there's so much footage, but in the, you know, 90s and early 2000s, it was always like, oh, I didn't really see what happened.
Don't remember exactly.
And are they sending a message by...
Well, and this is maybe just the hate that's there between Carlton and Collingwood after that 1910 grand final. Maybe they both beat each other in a grand final now. Mm. Now, round 9, they played Richmond again, Carlton.
Mm-hmm.
Now trying to avenge that loss. Richmond kicked its 7th goal late into the final term and they looked safe. However, earned Cowley out of the goal and then a behind to reduce the margin to 3. Cowley added another behind and Richmond attacked, but Smith missed a chance to seal the game and the lead was back to 3. The ball that swung to the Blues forward line when Charlie Fisher, who had returned to the field, punted the ball through for the winning goal just before the bell.
Then they won by 3.
They won by 3. So Richmond beaten Carlton for the first time and then lost it. Round 10, Billy Dick, former captain, premiership captain actually, played his 100th and last goal.
Mm.
And that was the game they kicked 2-5 against St Kilda, so not a
not a great one.
No. Round 12, they had a loss to South and Charlie Hammond had to come out of retirement and help the Blues and played for the last 4 games of the season. And one last thing, in round 13, they had a 5-goal loss to the Pivots. It wasn't helped by the fact that 4 players, that being Jack Keeley, Charlie Cannett, Ern Cowley and Fred Johnson, were late. They'd missed the bus to the game. So they chose substitutes and the game was about to begin and then they all arrived. So they all ran onto the field as the game had been started and they kind of dressed as play was going.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. Oh, here we go. They've been given permission to drive to Geelong in a car. And not go with the rest of the team on the
and
train.
They showed up late.
Yeah. Last time that happens.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, they got properly beaten, didn't they?
Mm.
They were actually winning at quarter time by 2. It was 2-3 to 2-5, and then it just
on adrenaline.
They only kicked another 2 for the game, and Geelong kicked another 8 and won by 30. Crazy.
Very good.
So I know we said a few things about umpires, but did you see the one with Jack Worrell profiling umpire Jack Elder in the Australasian?
No.
He is one of the only 3 umpires in 30 years to have complete confidence of managers, players, and the public.
No prizes for guessing who one of those other 2-3 are.
umpires.
Yeah.
Oh, our boy Ovo.
Yeah, it's got to be, doesn't it?
Can you imagine the telegrams
between
those two?
Who's the third, though?
There we go.
Not Fox.
Mm.
He's been demoted.
No. It says that Elder has umpired over 500 matches in 12 years of service. Because maybe it goes to explain why he was umpire of the century.
Good, let's move on.
And sorry if we've talked about umpires too much.
Yeah.
And moving up to second place is the mighty Collingwood. Collingwood with 10 glorious wins and 4 losses and 145.1%. Oh, second place. Doesn't seem right.
Coached by Jock McHale, captained by Percy Wilson again, and their lead goal kicker was Tom Wraith with 26, not Dick Lee.
Should we also say that, going back to Carlton very quickly, it was a Carlton player who led the league goal kicking?
Led the league goal kicking. It was, wasn't it? It was Cowley.
That's right.
With 37. Yeah, yeah.
Well, 35
during
the season.
Yeah.
CC Mullins, that's 34. Just saying.
Exactly. So Tom Wraith was their lead goal kicker with 26. Dick Lee only kicked 17. Although he only played seven games for the season, so they kicked 144 goals total and had 27 players play for them.
Yeah. Now, round one...
Jock was still playing, but he only managed one game that year.
Yeah, what he actually said at the start of the year was, look, I'll play if you need me, but I'd prefer not to play. So his body was getting old, he needed to
rest. He said that last year. I mean, last year was...
He missed the
first game, didn't he? And that was his first game in
170, I think.
Which was the record at the time, yeah. And then he missed quite a bit of the season. He was a bit all over the place.
So he's getting old. So round one saw a comprehensive unfurling of the flag with a 35-point win over Carlton at Victoria Park.
So a good one, yeah. A good way to start.
Guess who unfurled the flag? Who usually unfurls the flag?
The wife of the president.
Yep, correct.
Lovely.
Wife of Jim Sharp. She unfurled the flag. It was flown at half-mast, however, out of respect for Carlton's captains, Rod McGregor, because of his brother dying, and also a guy called George Elmsley.
Who died in war?
I don't know when we lost this tradition of the wives of the presidents unfurling the flag.
It'd be great, wouldn't it?
Bring it back, West Coast. Bring it back. If there's any West Coast administrators listening to our show,
yeah.
Even though you're a good about 80 episodes off joining the league.
Yeah.
Just hanging out to hear about the waffle section when I do around the grounds.
Round 35, it's a long year.
Round 5, they had a stirring win over St Kilda, having 35 scoring shots to 15. They kicked an inaccurate 14 goals 21 to absolutely thump the Saints, but they would lose that return bout. Round 7 was the game that Jock McHale played against Essendon. And in that game, Collingwood kicked 10 goals straight to win that game by 65 points. They kicked 14 goals 14. And held Essendon to 13 scoring shots.
Yeah, 4-9. Unbelievable.
Brunswick Oval in round 13, they beat Fitzroy, kicking 10 goals 19. Those 19 points would end up being the winning margin. And then, as you said, Dick Lee only played the 7 games and kicked the goal in all but one of them.
At least a goal. Yeah, in all but one, yeah.
Sorry, Collingwood.
Well, for finishing second, that's still pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, South Melbourne. South will go in and win over all. 13 wins, 1 loss. One little loss. 143.1%. Ooh, just less than Collingwood. Charlie.
Yeah, coached by Herb Howson and Sonny Elms, it says. It was a duo of coaching.
So just stop for a second. Sorry.
Yes, Charlie. Please.
So they've got 3 more wins than Collingwood, but their percentage is less than Collingwood. Interesting.
Very interesting. Captained by Jim Caldwell, and their lead goal kicker was Gerald Ryan, with 32.
Interesting that Caldwell was captain as well, because it would have been Vic Belcher the previous season.
Yeah. The last 3, really. Yeah. The 2 before they went out as well. Mm.
Talking about their coach, sorry?
I said it was, Herb Howson and Sonny Elms.
Yeah, okay. So Herb Howson was actually the club secretary at the time as well. So he had played back in 1897 and had been club secretary since the mid-1900-somethings. and at 45 was one of the oldest to make his senior coaching debut. Apparently Sonny Elms, though, it's been found out since that he was like an assistant coach. He wasn't the head coach. So people have gone back through the records to actually work out that it wasn't.
So like one of the original trainers almost.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Or assistant coach or
midfield
coach maybe.
Yeah. Classic. They're getting ahead of it now, considering they didn't have a coach until 1909.
Yeah.
They're really taking it in leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
Gerald Ryan was their lead goal kicker. Their second highest goal kicker was Chris Laird with 26. They kicked 151 total for the season. So that's the highest amount of goals kicked.
Did they?
I believe.
I got them kicking 134.
Maybe that's in finals as well.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah.
We're about to announce the Coulthard Shield later too. You just reminded me. Sorry, Charlie.
No, and had 29 players play for them that year. So quite a few players. Well, not only four played all 16 games. Spoiler alert again. they had quite a few who were extremely consistent. They only had a couple of players play one, a couple play two, and a few play four.
Yeah. Some of those include... Recruits included Bill Toomey, who would go on to win the Stall Gift in 1924, and Port Melbourne forward Bill Walton.
There you go. Mm.
Now, they started the season brilliantly, boys, with wins over Geelong, Fitzroy and Collingwood. That round three win over Collingwood really announced their premiership credentials to the league.
Mm, big teams.
In that game, they kicked 5 goals in the last 12 minutes to run out 18-point winners. Nice. Round four, though, was the one game they lost, and here's the story. So the game was played on the King's birthday Monday, and the team had spent the previous 2 days enjoying the hospitality of a club patron at his holiday house in the Dandenongs.
Lovely.
So one of their players, Mark Tandy, later recalled that most of the boys didn't shut their eyes for 48 hours. Some of the boys were wobbling at the knees as they walked from the tram stop to play St Kilda. When some were dressed to go out into the field, they had to be headed in the direction of the area gate and given a shove off. So it was a surprise seeing out the game itself was a bit of a miracle. So therein lies the reason they lost that game to St Kilda.
They were hungover. Off their faces.
The patrons obviously keen for them to win. Why would you put it on the night before?
I love it.
Round seven, they played against Richmond, and they had a player called Mick Ryan. This would be his only VFL game in that 52-point win. However, he would go on to win the Australian Golf Open title in 1925.
Amazing.
Now, round 12 against Carlton at Princess Park was a real test. They hadn't won there for 11 years. But on this occasion, they took the chocolates by 2 goals. Wayward kicking, only reason it wasn't a bigger win.
Yeah.
Now, Kaz, the South Melbourne player was also the CC Mullins champion of the colony, wasn't he?
Yes, we're looking at Jack P. Howell. I really like this mainly also because... one of the first players to be given the nickname Chooker.
Chooker.
Ah, yes.
Any local football club that doesn't have somebody called Chooker is kidding
doing
themselves.
It wrong.
Nickname Chooker, like his son later on, he came from Melbourne District and starred in the 1918 Grand Final with magnificent marking and kicking as the number one ruckman, and later played for Footscray in the VFA. All those Footscray supporters out there. And that's all we've got on him. There's a little bit more about his son, maybe, because he plays later on in the 1940s, there's a little bit more information about players.
Did he play every game that year, Charlie?
No, 1918 was his last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Got on top.
Yeah.
So he played, 15, not 16, obviously, 17 and 18.
So only 3 years of his career.
Yeah, but he really... came up quite a bit. So in 1915 he only kicked 1 goal, 1917 he kicked 5, and then in 1918 he kicked 16.
Yeah,
there you go.
So I like that, how he rucked against Roy Cazaly in that unfortunate loss, marring their what could have been a perfect season.
I was here, their ruckman.
Yeah,
gotcha.
As far as I know.
Excellent.
That's what
Well, that's the teams. Let's go around the grounds quickly. So
how are we looking? Are there a few more to talk about this year?
VFA's back, and that's about it, actually. Everyone's still out.
Okay, great. So this will be quick.
Nice and quick. So in the Waffle, East Fremantle took the chocolates there, and in the VFA, North Melbourne, who I guess you'd call a three-peat, even though the season hadn't been... They hadn't played
for 2
years.
Oh, yeah, of course,
years.
Yeah.
Gosh, they are so dominant there.
Mm, and in Sydney, East Sydney won the flag.
East Sydney.
East Sydney.
Yeah, it rolls off the tongue.
It does. Now I do have some dick watch and some crap watch for you.
Oi! Always lovely.
Do. All right, Ivo Crap, let's get to him first. He is back, guys. I know he retired.
With a vengeance.
Back to umpiring.
But I think he's back. He has consented, so in July he consented to umpire a match for the Western Australian Football League on Saturday. He says he would be glad to finish the season if he thought the strain would not be too much for an old football injury he possessed as a memento of his connection to the game. Probably he will continue so long as the condition will allow. And so he umpired that game on the season, and then he umpired the rest of the season out.
Still got it, Ivo.
He also did the league final that year.
Yeah, yeah, he's gone up pretty high.
Yeah, which was one of the best games ever witnessed in the West.
Oh, of course.
Yep.
oh, God.
One of... no, I found some stuff about like his training regime, but I think it's for another year. I think it's another...
Save it, another story.
Another time.
Yeah. Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting it doesn't mention what the ailment or injury was that they're talking about.
But he's 47 years old at this stage.
Oh, yeah, and still running around.
Still running around.
Yeah.
Oh, no, here it is. I've got it. Crap still keeps fit by active training. In the good old days, he would begin training in the first week of March. For a period, brisk walking was deemed sufficient, and this was increased to running. When he could cover 3 miles in a brisk run without feeling distressed, he considered he was ready for the field.
Yeah, nice.
Today, being 1918, he still keeps to this practice of former years, although not indulging in such rigorous preparation. In a perfect state of health and physical preservation are his inheritance.
3 miles doesn't...
He's perfect, man.
He also umpired a charity game in October.
Good on him.
Mm. Now, some quick dick watch as well. So, in mid to late April, the New South Wales Football League decided to open their season on May 4th. Mr. Dick Condon, the Collingwood player, has been nominated as League Commissioner.
You're joking. Oh,
he's in charge of the whole league.
That can only be good.
His close interest and attachment has resulted in his appointment as the League Commissioner for settlement of disputes, protests and charges against clubs or players.
And you know how he does that?
Well, I mean, if anyone's got experience in dealing with disputes, it's Dick.
Oh, the irony.
There's really no dispute. Don't even bother arguing with him.
No. All right, let's get stuck into some finals.
Finals!
We need a song for finals, don't we?
Around the finals. No.
Like the September Kazali song. What's the other one? One Day in September?
One Day in September. But we need... Well, there's a few days in September at this stage.
And October as well.
Let's find a final song. All right, so the first final was Collingwood versus St Kilda.
It was at the MCG.
Yes.
Crowd, you ask?
Tell us.
I did. Crowd.
Yeah, good. Crowd, 28,375.
Very
coming
healthy.
Back up, aren't they?
They are. They're back.
So, yeah, second playing fourth, and it goes as you would expect, although it seems like a pretty good game. Very close, bit seesawing.
Yeah,
so,
well, for time, it looked like St Kilda would prevail.
Yeah.
They had a seven-point lead at the three-quarter time.
At three-quarter time, they were up at half-time as well. And yeah, and then it just sort of fell away from them. They only kicked a point in the last quarter to Collingwood's 2 goals. Five.
And it wasn't until a goal late in the quarter as well that snatched that thrilling victory.
Yeah, because they end up winning by 9 in the end.
9 points.
So it was Collingwood 7-16-58 to St Kilda's 7-7-49.
I'd love to know if it was the defenders for Collingwood. Because we've talked about Dick Lee, but we haven't talked about defenders.
We do every now and then.
Yeah. For them, I was just wondering around that time.
Tom Wraith managed to kick 3 that game, so their goal kicker kept on going, and Dick Lee with 2 as well. So they did very well. Whereas the Saints, McNamara kicked 2, and then there were and Les Boyd as well kicked 2. So same avenues to goal as usual.
Yeah.
But
not keeping it away from
now.
Them.
The following week, there was no game.
What?
Do you know why? Postponed. Because they had a torrent of rain that hit the MCG. First time a finals game had to be delayed in VFL history.
Oh, really?
Parts of the South Yarra and Richmond were flooded.
It's a winter sport. Harden up.
So 2 weeks later, they played this second semi-final, I guess you'd call it, which was South Melbourne versus Carlton, also at the MCG.
Also at the MCG. Crowd, you ask?
Crowd, I ask.
Was even higher, 36,116.
Gosh.
A lot higher.
Again, a bit of a yo-yoing match. Very close as well. So South were leading the first... Leading after the first break by 6.
Yeah.
Carlton at half time by 3. South at the at three-quarter time by 7. And then Carlton just couldn't quite do it. They managed to get it a bit closer, but South still won by 5.
They had a shot on goal late in the quarter, could have won them the game. Woolley had a shot from a tight angle, but he kicked the ball out of bounds on the full. And then as another promising attack was being defended by South Melbourne, the siren went.
Some great close games.
To see South Melbourne win that by?
5. So points. Carlton 7-11-53 defeated by South Melbourne's 8-10-58. They're very close.
And part of the... Excuse me. No, go on.
Okay, go.
No, I was just going to say, part of the success of the football early on is it these close games and this competitiveness. Otherwise, say if it was too one-sided, people wouldn't be like, too keen to watch it or something like that. I think it's
Which brings us to the grand final.
Yes.
Final match of the season.
The actual final match of the season.
Yeah, South Melbourne versus Collingwood at the MCG. Crowd, I ask.
Crowd, you ask. It was not actually that much bigger than the semi. It was 39,262.
Correct.
Controversial.
Thank you. good game again. Very good game. All the finals this year. 1918.
All right, now through the use of our magical technology here on the podcast, we have this amazing phone that can call the past. So we're going to use that phone to call the South Melbourne Premiership captain Jim Caldwell. Welcome to the show, Jim. Now, you must be ecstatic to have won today. Mostly because your debut season was 1909 when South last won it, but you missed that game, didn't you?
Hi, folks. Yeah, I did. I got into a bit of strife in that year's previous final.
A bit of strife, all right. You received a 9-week suspension for striking George Bruce.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. But as a younger player, I thought I'd have plenty of chances to win another. It's taken me 9 bloody years to get it.
But get it you did, Jim. So, look, this South team looked quite different to what it did last year, with 6 new faces playing today.
Look, it's been great to have those new faces around the place. I mean, we've got Jack Graham, Chip Turner, Tammy Hayes, Tommy O'Halloran, Ernie Barber and Chris Laird. Look, their enthusiasm has just been great. It's their energy that's really driven us to this win today and all year.
Now, he wasn't the only new face of the club. You had a new coach this year as well in Herb Howson.
Look, he wasn't actually a new face, really. He was a past player in the early days and he's been around for ages. He's been our club secretary since 1904. So his voice has always been there. I guess it was just more of an official voice this year.
Look, now, it was an up-and-down start to the game. You started well, but then seemed to get a bit of nerves.
Look, Harold Robinson kicked his goal early on, and we knew we were on, but then I think we got ahead of ourselves. Dick Lee was pretty good kicking that goal, and Collingwood really held sway for the rest of that quarter. But we were able to kick a late goal, which meant the lead was only a goal at quarter time.
Now, speaking of Collingwood, they had a lot of the play in the second quarter, but really wasted their opportunities. They kicked 1-6 in the second quarter, including 2 posters.
Yeah, look, it was lucky for us. We couldn't even manage a point in that quarter. But all credit to the Pies. They should have been 8 goals ahead of us. And Dick Lee took that great one-handed mark in the second and kicked his second goal. Their fans are up and about and chatty, I tell you what.
You still trailed by 16 at the half. How was the mood in the room? Did you feel you could still win?
Yeah, of course we did. Look, we'd only lost 1 game all season, and we knew we could win it. We had defeated Collingwood twice in the year, and we knew that we could knock them off again today. So it was, look, really a feeling of wanting to get back out there and get the job done.
So you came out to start the second half, tried to outspeed Collingwood?
Yeah, look, we knew that we had those younger boys on our list who were fit and fast, and we wanted to use them to our advantage and run the older Collingwood team off their legs.
Look, well, it seemed to work. You clawed your way back into it, but just as you seemed to get into the game with a brilliant run through the centre by Artie Woods, Collingwood's Les Hughes replied immediately.
Yeah, they're a champion team, and the reigning premiers, they know how to win these big games, so we knew they wouldn't go down easily.
One of the most important moves was when Vic Belcher switched to the ruck in the final quarter.
Yeah, great move there by Herb. And really, this move won us the game. His influence and brilliance on the game really swayed the game in our favour.
There was a controversial moment in that frantic last few minutes when Pies fans complained over a dubious mark awarded to Gerald Ryan. And from that mark, he kicked his second goal and it levelled the scores. How did you see that?
Oh, it was a mark. There was nothing dubious about it. Their fans are passionate and I understand that. Look, they might be up in arms, but there was nothing in it.
How did you go in that frantic final minute?
Oh, it was a heart stopper. Boy, oh boy. Look, starting with Dick Lee taking that mark and missing his shot, and then it seemed to happen in slow motion. I saw Vic Belcher clear the ball and suddenly Tandy had it, and he raced past three players on the wing, and that ball seemed to drop short, and after that quick scramble in the square, somehow young Chrissy Laird, he got the foot to the ball and kicked the goal, and 30 seconds later, the siren went.
And that was it. After 10 seasons, you're finally a premiership player.
Yeah, what a feeling. Best feeling ever. Especially with everything happening at the moment. To give our fans something positive, look, it's just a great feeling.
So the media seem to agree that the best players today were Tom O'Halloran, Jack Howell, Ship Turner, and for Collingwood, Les Hughes, and also he played a blinder. But I think we all believe that it was Vic Belcher who really turned the game for you.
Yeah, look, all those boys were great. And yeah, Vic's the man who really stands out for me. Because of his final quarter, I mean, just sticks in my mind. His drive around the pack was invaluable. He was just a workhorse for us all day.
Look, mate, well done on a fantastic, almost perfect season. Go and enjoy this victory and share it with those South Melbourne people who are so happy you have achieved the ultimate success again.
Yeah, we will, we will. Thanks very much, lads.
So there you go.
So South Melbourne winning that game by 5 points.
By 5 points. Collingwood's 7-15-57 defeated by South Melbourne's 9-8-62. So that accuracy just got them there in the end.
Wasn't it funny as well hearing about Collingwood supporters complaining about a controversial mark in
yes,
that last quarter?
Yes, yeah. Does that remind you
of anything? Has changed.
No.
Not much has changed. Also, they lost the 2018 grand final by how many points?
5.
History repeating.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Isn't it?
And
I wonder whether we had any information about whether, as they unfurled the banner in 1918, did it just fall apart?
Yes. Potentially. Good to see all finals were decided by under 10 points as well.
Yeah.
9, 5, and 5.
Lots of great games. That was good. It seemed like a really... like close fought season, like there were a lot of good games throughout the season as well. I mean, I know, well, Essendon were terrible, of course, Simi. Oh, yeah. I mean, you can only imagine how well Melbourne would have done if they were there. But we're just doing the right thing and staying out of it, keeping our noses clean as usual.
So that brings us to the end of the season.
Yes, 1918, only 100 years behind, yeah. As we said. Can you believe it?
Can you believe it? So let's just summarise this season. Premiers were South Melbourne.
Mm-hmm. Wooden Spoon, Tim?
Essendon.
The Mighty Dons.
The CC Mullins champion of the colony.
Was, I just said before. I did, because I didn't want to get the initial.
Yeah, South Melbourne player.
Jack P. Howell.
Jack P. Howell.
The champion.
And the lead goal kicker was Ern Cowley with, what did we say?
It
was
35.
35.
Which is the lowest leading goal kicker total since 1903.
Yeah.
The winner of the Coulthard Shield for the highest score was...
Was it Collingwood?
It was Carlton. 16-15-111.
That's right. And they smashed someone.
Well,
you've
got Ern in that team.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, good on them.
Smashed someone.
They smashed someone. Good.
Have we seen Carlton on there yet? Is that their first Coulthard?
On the Coulthard Shield?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Good question. Okay. this is their first Coulthard Shield since 1909.
Oh, I see.
Which is also the year South Melbourne won the flag. So good year for good omens for them.
Oh.
Yes, that's good. It. Good.
That is lovely. Good effort.
All right. Well, thank you for listening.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. It was I can't believe I've said it. I'm going to say it again. I can't believe we're up to only 100 years ago.
I know. It seems like an achievement, though.
Yeah, it really does.
And we're now through the war years. The war is over.
Yes. Everyone, I hope we don't see another one.
No, I think it's pretty clean sailing. I mean, this League of Nations idea is great.
Yeah, it's going to work out.
Yeah, and we get Melbourne back next season.
Thank God, because I tell you what, I've been missing it.
Long time in the wilderness.
Yeah, it has been.
Well, I haven't checked the ladder yet for next season.
No, I like to keep it fresh. Yeah. it's been good. I think we're cruising along. So now we're back to 9 teams next year with the bye.
Back to
the bye. We'll have to keep an eye out on the curse of the bye. Yeah. See how it goes.
So far, so good.
But as we said, thank you guys for listening. And please follow us, subscribe, review,
share. Oh, yeah, we both said it.
Tweet.
Tweet, yeah. Well, I get lots of tweets, but keep tweeting.
Yeah, keep tweeting. Tell us how great we are, because we need it.
And don't troll us.
Yeah, please, because I'm very soft. I can't handle it. Please just keep on listening.
Yeah, we enjoy it thoroughly, as you can hopefully hear.
Yeah. Look forward to getting stuck into that next season, boys.
Absolutely. 1919. I think it's going to be a great year.
Oh.
Huzzah.
Beautiful. Hooroo.
You can contact Kick to Kick by email at kicktokickpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at kicktokickpod or Instagram, which is at kicktokickpod as well. For our growing list of all our references, please go to kicktokick.podbean.com/p/reference-list. Thank you very much for listening.